Hello, everybody. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode was recorded on Saturday, November 10th, outside of a party in the Parkview neighborhood of Washington, D.C. It is Nathan Jurgensen and I talking about episode 3 of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. Unlike the Adam episode, unlike the Esmeralda episode, this one doesn't give picks or break down like our favorites or whatever. This is a look at the show from a more academic standpoint. Nathan is a PhD student at the University of Maryland. He's very good in what he does, so rather than just talk about the show like a friend would talk about the show, he kind of breaks it down in an academic way. There's a lot of academic jargon, but it never gets boring. I'm really happy with how this turned out. If you're interested in the text that Nathan was reading from during the show, you can read it along with him. That doesn't make sense. You can read it yourself on the podcast description of this page. So if you go to youmethemeverybody.com, it's there. Or if you're listening to this as a download, you can see it in your podcast description. So that's that. Moving on, it's time for plugs. Plugs on Friday, this Friday, Friday, November 16th, we'll be recording Holiday-ish Part 2 at Above the Bike Shop in Washington, D.C. Storytellers, stand-up comedians, and musicians all doing holiday-themed things. Monday, November 19th, I will be at the Looking Glass Lounge recording 8x8. Not recording, we're just doing 8x8. It's a fun show, 8 performers, 8 minutes each. The following Wednesday, November 21st, I will be at the Wonderland Ballroom recording Holiday-ish Part 2 yet again. This one's going to be way more music. The first one's way more stand-up and storytelling. The Monday after Thanksgiving, Monday, November 26th, I will be recording You, Me, Them, Everybody live at the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois. That next Friday, November 30th, we'll be recording You, Me, Them, Everybody live at the Wonderland Ballroom. It's the anniversary show. The show turns 3 years old that day. The live show turns 3 years old. The podcast turns 4, and I turn older. So that's my birthday show. Come to that. Those are all the shows. All those shows can be found at youmethemeverybody.com/events. Thanks for downloading the show. I hope you enjoy it. And here it is. So this episode, we're going to recap episode 3, season 1 of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. I am with Nathan Jurgensen. Nathan has never seen Drag Race or Drag Race All-Stars. Is that correct, Nathan?
That is correct. I just watched my first episode of Drag Race.
So you watched episode 3 in the first...
Season 1
of All-Stars.
Episode 3.
Exactly. Okay.
Is All-Stars a different thing?
This is a different incarnation of it. And I think...
These were all winners of the
No. None of these contestants are winners. These are all the people that people liked. For example, the woman that was eliminated, Latrice Royale. Yeah. She won Miss Congeniality from last season. These are all fan favorites, and that's kind of how they curated this show. One of the things that you might not know because you haven't seen the show before is the team aspect is brand new this year, which gives it a whole new vibe. And the first two episodes we did with Adam Friedland and we did with Esmeralda Leone, Esmeralda had seen the show, Adam had never seen the show, and we sort of recapped what the show is. We've already established that you actually wrote an essay while watching the show.
I wrote an email to myself with notes as I watched.
Unlike most people, and this is how you usually watch television.
Because I'm a grad student and I don't have fun.
Well, you analyze the show, and actually, rather than recap the episode and recap each contestant and your thoughts and feelings on the projections of the show, I'd rather just go through the email that you sent me today. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
So why don't
can I preface this with that I don't necessarily agree with the things that I was writing. Those are just like what was popping into my head as I was watching it, and under further contemplation, I may or may not fully agree. It is sort of random thoughts.
Perfect. So I'm going to throw back to you between your paragraphs, and we'll talk about why you wrote what you wrote. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay, so let's start with what you wrote me.
I mean, am I reading this?
Yeah, I would love for you to read this. Don't read it in order. I mean, like, read it in order, but yeah, not the entire thing. We'll go paragraph to paragraph, okay?
Okay, so I started writing. I'm going to type notes as I watched. I made a Manhattan... which is a drink with
it's like, a drink it's a,
whiskey,
with whiskey
and some sweet vermouth and some bitters and then
Bing it, guys. If you don't know what it is,
Bing it. Microsoft Bing.
Bing it.
Catch it.
If you can, catch the wave.
Okay. And chocolate ice cream. I figured chocolate ice cream was.
So you were having a treat while you were watching a show.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was nice.
That's fair.
And I said I'll write these notes how I think, which involves annoying academic jargon, because that's how I think.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of think in that jargon, though. I try not to use that jargon when I talk, you know, to non-academics.
Okay, continue.
Right. Well, that's annoying. So I said my immediate reaction is how the show sort of looks and feels kind of like every other reality show I've seen.
Like, absolutely.
It's in some respect, it's spoofing Top Model. On the other hand, it's also, I think, using the same model as Top Model.
Yes.
It's kind of like it. I didn't get so much that it was a spoof, but actually more that it's following
It's completely formulaic in that aspect. Yes.
Yeah.
It's equal. I'd say it's a little bit more Project Runway than Top Model.
Right.
Do you watch either?
I've seen both. Yeah, it's more Project Runway. I mean, she's playing Tyra Banks.
No, I would disagree. Yeah. She's more Project Runway because when she's...
Who's Tyra Banks?
Tyra Banks is a Top Model.
Top Model. Yeah, that's what RuPaul's doing. RuPaul does it better than Tyra Banks, too.
Of course. Yes, I agree.
RuPaul does Tyra Banks better than Tyra Banks does.
RuPaul does everyone better than everyone, so that's
true.
That's true. Okay, but it's more Top Model. Sorry, it's more Project Runway, and here's why. When they're in the workroom and RuPaul is in a suit and taking on the characters through the mail, it's very Tim Gunn-ish. She's guiding them. She's giving them notes. She's not actually saying, do this, don't do that. She goes, make it work. That's very Tim Gunn. And then when she's judging them on the runway, she's very Heidi Klum in that aspect.
Right.
Therefore, to me, it's more Project Runway. There's actual substance, unlike, say, Top Model.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, that's fair. So that's just kind of the first thing that struck me was how much of the show is a spoof or maybe even like a satire, like the movie Airplane or something, of reality shows, and how much is it actually still beholden to the formula of sort of boring, crappy reality TV. At the same time, I think that Top Model is operating under this like really standard version of gender roles, right?
Of course.
Like this, you know, the so-called feminine mystique of the way that women are supposed to be, and clearly, one of the coolest things I thought about the show was that we saw sort of non-normative people, not just that they were drag queens, not just that it was gay men, but it was also people of different colors, people of different backgrounds. They didn't talk about it in the show, but my sense was that some of these people probably had very interesting backstories, unlike the rest of reality TV.
Absolutely. Just the ages alone.
You don't see 40-year-olds on reality TV. It's
Chad is 39.
Attractive, drunk 20-year-olds on the rest of reality. So I really appreciated that.
This season, I think our youngest is 25 and our oldest is 39, 40.
Can we imagine a 40-year-old on Real World?
No.
Outside of the first season.
No, absolutely not.
The next thing I wrote was Trandresher lol.
Trandresher.
That was funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
I like that.
I'm with you.
So the next one I wrote this was a really interesting moment, was the first thing that they had to do was take a photo of themselves looking butch.
Exactly, yes.
And I think the content was them looking butch, and that's kind of what I thought I was going to end up going and talking about the gender roles and all that. Sociology grad students, that's like what I'm supposed to be interested in. But what I really thought was interesting was that project of taking a photo of themselves.
Yes.
They're on a reality show being photographed, being videoed, and they're being videoed holding a camera taking a photo of themselves. And in fact, I took one screenshot. Maybe you could post this.
I will definitely post the screenshot
on the website. And so what you see is through the camera, what network is this on?
This is on Logo.
Logo, okay. So through the Logo camera, you see one of the contestants taking a photo of himself.
Can I see your phone really quick?
Yeah, he's taking a photo of himself.
That's Chad Michaels.
Chad Michaels. And in the background, Chad Michaels' partner is taking a photo with his phone of the contestant taking a photo of his phone and the camera that you, the viewer, are watching through.
Really quickly, I don't remember when they gave the rules that they had to hold their own camera.
They did, yeah.
They did, okay. I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, it had to be a self-shot. A selfie in internet lingo.
Okay.
And I wrote that it's super interesting because the camera serves as, in quotes, the generalized other. The generalized other is a social psychological term of how we perceive ourselves through how other people see us.
Yes.
So this is generalized other, the other people who are viewing you, and you view yourself as you think they view you.
Okay.
Right. I thought that was really interesting because that's kind of what reality TV is about, kind of performing for the camera, and also I think that's what we do outside of reality TV. People that aren't on
reality TV
are certainly doing that. So I thought that was really symbolic, having the person perform, taking a photo of themselves, performing for the camera while on a camera. I thought that was really indicative of you know, the whole show in general, which is putting on a performance and being aware of it as a performance. So drag queens are different than the person they're impersonating, or the gender sort of roles they're impersonating, because drag queens are very aware of femininity as a performance.
Absolutely.
Whereas on Top Model, it's sort of treated as something natural and essential, and even though, of course, it's also a performance.
Of course.
So I think Drag Race is just more honest about
what
Top Model...
So they might be one of the only shows that are willing to embrace the fakeness of trying to perform.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, and I think in that way it's really healthy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, so the project of them taking a photo of themselves was sort of symbolic of that, and I sort of go on for
one of the things that you don't mention
that.
This is the only contestant that really had a hard time with this was Latrice Royale. She was the one that was eliminated at the end of the episode.
Yeah,
Latrice does not feel attractive at all, and she barely feels attractive when she's in drag. So for her doing this challenge, it was really difficult for her, and I thought that was actually very fascinating.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a bummer because the show is sort of this massive collection of uplifting messages, but ultimately what the show is about, and it's sort of where I ended the email, is kind of it's very judgmental.
Let's keep going.
Sort of everybody being happy, and then of course the show ends with everybody crying.
We'll get to that at the end, but let's keep going through the episode.
Yeah, yeah. So I go on about this the cameras. I have, you know, the photographic gaze emanates from the home viewer onto an individual, back into his camera, back to him. Remember, he's pointing the camera at himself, and then back to us with the person in the background. So it sort of completes the circle of media gaze. It's sort of breaking the fourth wall and with that last person in the background, which the photo will be on the website.
Next paragraph.
Let's move to the main stunt to which that they were judged and eliminated by, the person who had immunity.
The team challenge.
That immunity is who won this challenge of doing crazy behavior on the street. I thought it was a little uncomfortable one of the challenges was because they're on the street and there's passerbys, they were supposed to do things
pranks.
That were pranks, get the people to do something that's like maybe a little humiliating. And
before you continue, let me just say that this was absolutely the worst challenge of any season of Drag Race.
It was boring to watch.
It was really bad, and I don't want to agree with what you wrote. I sadly do. So let's go from there.
Yeah, yeah. The part that was most uncomfortable was one of the things they had to do is ask a stranger for $5, and then a person who is clearly not wealthy walked by, and they all had a big laugh saying, don't ask them for $5.
Yeah.
And what is sort of the whole idea here is that you're watching like non-normal people, and that's really cool, and then you like immediately become aware that, you're watching a bunch of rich men.
Yeah. Wealthy. Slow down here.
Or at
you're
least
not.
The celebration and embracement of wealth.
No.
It came off as privileged.
It came off as that.
As privileged men.
When that happened, I don't know if you noticed this, RuPaul did not chime in on that. RuPaul was in the
I remember RuPaul laughing.
RuPaul was not...
Remember RuPaul...
RuPaul laughed.
No, that's all edited in a way that... RuPaul might have been smiling, and it might have been for something else.
Yeah.
You know, those shows are edited so
crazy. This was not RuPaul
crazy.
Laughing at someone. This was the contestant.
The show had a good laugh.
The show definitely
and
had a good
laugh.
And I don't
RuPaul's
like
show.
That. Yeah, that's
and, it's
and I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
So that was
very disappointing to me. I completely agree with you. This whole challenge was very bad.
That what it sort of reminded me was not of kind of the drag culture that I'm most aware of, which is sort of like the glam 1970s, the stuff that I'm reading
the
about.
That RuPaul came up with.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking like downtown New York era and Studio 54 era.
Well,
that's sort of the stuff that I'm more aware of, and that's not the vibe I got.
This challenge was really bad because this kind of reminded me is when I had to give out flyers after shows. That's kind of what this is just trying to track down strangers that really don't want to take that flyer.
What
do I need to do to make you take this flyer? That's what this challenge was. It was awful.
Yeah, it felt like a little bit like, okay, we're supposed to laugh at these people on the street. And it's a different feel than on, like, a drag show.
Yeah.
It's in their space. And now it's on the public street.
And really quickly, once again, Latrice Royale brought up that, like, I've never done this in the daytime, let alone outside.
And yet... was judged for it.
Yeah,
and penalized for not doing that.
That was uncomfortable. This should not have been a challenge. Yeah. It was really bad.
Really taking it out of their safe space and putting it on the street is something that without those TV cameras could be potentially dangerous.
Absolutely. It was a bad challenge. I don't know why they did it. And yeah. I actually do know why they did it, but we'll get to that later. Continue.
Yeah. All right. So my next note is that I was making my second Manhattan. My second drink. Fares. That was Fares. All right. So after let's move past that.
Okay.
Was there something you wanted to say about that?
The challenge itself was done because the reason why I bring up the teammates thing is because now every single challenge has to be this teammate thing. So it's really not about what you can do. It's how do you work with your teammate.
Right.
Latrice Royale did not work well with her teammate because if you remember the challenge, Latrice Royale was... Her teammate was awesome.
Didn't help out her teammate.
Never actually explained the challenge. It's a hidden camera situation and they alternate roles. So one person's in the booth telling the other person what to do and then they alternate, right? So when Latrice Royale's partner was in the booth, they go, Latrice, find the sardines. She couldn't find the sardines. All the props were hidden in a trash can. So Latrice Royale is bent over looking for a tin of sardines at the bottom of a trash can, wasting time, and it's just like 2 minutes of her bent over a trash can.
Which could have been shots from before the challenge. I mean, remember how these shows are edited? Never taken at face value.
The point
is... You really think the camera was hidden? I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. Right, I don't think...
These shows are edited in such a way to tell a specific story, but I understand what you're
it's a pointless challenge that actually teaches us nothing.
Yeah, and it was mildly uncomfortable.
It was very uncomfortable.
For a couple of reasons I think we talked about.
Yes.
So the next scene after that is actually like this really touching scene in the dressing room.
The workroom.
In the workroom. Sorry.
The workroom, yes. This is where usually you see...
I think that's actually a good name for that.
It's the workroom, and this is where the drag queens prepare almost for all of their challenges, regardless of whether it's for the runway or for the streets or for whatever.
They're putting together their outfits, doing makeup.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's very, very impressive. And this is why, to me, it's better than Top Model or Project Runway. It's kind of combining the both. You see these drag queens work on a sewing machine. Yeah, you see them applying makeup. You see them dressing themselves. You see them getting into character.
It's not magic. It's something that actually happens.
It's hours of work.
Labor.
This is work. Like, there's no way around this.
There was a sociologist in the 50s named Irving Goffman, and he talked about front stage and backstage. And front stage is how you act, how you present yourself around other people, but then there's this work you have to do that nobody, you don't let anybody else see to make yourself presentable. He called it the backstage.
Yeah.
So think about when you're like a preteen and you're going on your first date or something, you're like kissing your arm or something like that. You would never want anybody to see that.
No.
That's backstage work that you're doing so that you can perform better on the front stage. And so you see the backstage.
And it's fascinating. It's fascinating to me.
And like I think the most fascinating part about it is that it's a scene where a bunch of men are talking about their insecurities and their feelings and then supporting each other.
Yes.
That doesn't happen on TV.
No.
That just doesn't happen on TV.
That's why this is great.
That's really terrific. It was really touching. I think there was one of the contestants talked about sort of society's expectations of what is a, quote, sexy man.
Yeah.
And sort of how that makes somebody feel uncomfortable when you can't live up to expectations, even though I think the show sort of sets up a whole nother set of expectations about what the correct drag queen is.
And that's why I... This is
sort
why
of where
it's
I end with my...
Such a good... episode for you to watch because this is not the norm.
Okay, all
this
right,
episode
all right, yeah.
is not the norm, but it's
I've
so important to talk
episode.
About.
I've seen one episode.
No, that's why I'm glad this is the one you saw.
Yeah, okay. So, and then I had this sort of random thought about confidence. So much of the show is about almost demanding confidence.
Yes, you have to
It's not even like it's something, it's like, it's when confidence is that demanded of you, when it's something that you have to put on and perform, the more performative confidence is, the more sort of insecure it comes across, and it also ultimately is self-defeating, when you just force the smile so hard that you could tell that you're not smiling underneath that mask.
Okay.
That sort of, I think, is in a sense a little self-defeating. The confidence was so forced... In fact, if you weren't confident, you'll be kicked off this show.
Yeah, that's right.
That actually came off as a little insecure, which is the opposite of confident.
Now, I gotta disagree with you on this.
I think it's fair.
I think it's more of a fake it till you make it thing.
Let's say it again.
Fake it till you make it. It's a very standard.
I agree. That's what confidence is, right? Confidence isn't anything other than acting confident.
And then all of a sudden, that's just how you are.
Right. But when it's enforced that strongly, when somebody will yell at you if you're not acting confident.
Hey, okay, don't say that. No one actually yells on this show. You better be
confident. I don't know.
RuPaul is an imposing figure, but RuPaul never raises her voice or his voice, regardless of the role.
it's
RuPaul has never raised
you'll be
his
kicked
or her
off the show. I mean, the rules and penalties. This is a competition,
is
right?
Yes.
This is a competition.
Yes, for America's Next Drag Superstar.
Right. There's rules. There's penalties through a fairly imposing figure that is RuPaul, and people judge you. Judges, not metaphorical
judges,
literal judges.
Yeah.
Judging you and making sure. So this is a random sort of. This fixation on confidence as something you have to do rather than something, you know, real confidence is knowing also when it's okay to not be confident. And there really wasn't any space to not be confident.
That's true.
Except for the workroom.
Yeah.
Except for the workroom.
When you're not performing.
Which is why it's such an important, probably the most important space in the entire show is that workroom.
Yes. It's one of the most, you haven't seen a backstage episode. We'll get to that at the end.
Okay. Well, next theme is consumerism. So there was the prizes, there was the underwear of the month, there was the shoes that there's sort of a fixation on consumerism and consumption, which is kind of somewhat ironic, but not really ironic. Consumer society is such a driving force of normative gender behaviors.
Absolutely.
And so to sort of see the celebration of that which they're kicking back against which I know it's about fashion. This is a fashion show.
It is part fashion show, yes.
And, of course, the fashion industry is a consumer industry.
Yes.
But I felt that was a little uncomfortable because I'm not saying they should abandon consumerism and fashion and all that. Like, who can really do that? That's a sociology grad student thing to say. But I think this embracement of consumption and consumerism should be done a little bit more critically. It was done sort of unashamedly.
I wish you saw last season. We'll get to that episode. No. Here's the thing what you're saying, though. You're completely right, and only last season with Sharon Needles, the punk rock track performer.
She seemed really cool.
Who actually won the entire thing, rejected every part of this, but still won.
Right.
We'll get to that at the end, but keep going.
All right, so now I'm writing that the show is over, and I'm making one more drink, and I'm comparing this show and its central message to other reality shows that I've seen, while the others, and probably most paradigmatically, really The Apprentice is I think the model of a reality show that says this is how you go out and change the world.
Okay.
So I think that's almost all reality shows are about learning skills and performing skills going out and changing the world, whereas the Drag Race struck me as it's not about going out and changing the world, but changing yourself.
Absolutely,
it's a show about the self rather than the outside world. And I'm not saying that to criticize it or say it's a good or a bad thing. I just thought
that's what it is.
It's just an observation one of the things I think that sets Drag Race apart.
Yeah, that's why RuPaul ends every episode with the same tagline. If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what this show is about.
Right.
It's about embracing self.
Yeah, so it's sort of, as I wrote in the email, is about constructing, shaping, and maintaining oneself, keeping it happy and in good working order, and coming to know and appreciate oneself as a self. I wrote, to do this, one just needs the right false confidence, getting back to that theme.
See, I don't think it's false. Until you make it, man. It's not false. You have to make it real.
To the false confidence to buy the right clothes. Of course, this is something that you're supposed to purchase.
Nope.
You can buy at a store.
Actually, no, you can't. All these
creativity isn't purchasable.
All these queens have to make their own stuff.
Right.
There was a person last year that was kicked off because she didn't make her own stuff.
That's right.
So, no, you have to be able to make this yourself.
Right. As I said, this email is what I was writing in the moment.
Of course. But see, I'm the one.
I agree with you and not my email. I wrote, to look good in that photograph one takes of oneself and that perfect MySpace angle.
That's true.
As the first competition demonstrates. If you learn to look beautiful, know the right designer labels, and lip sync to someone else's song, and that's really important that you lip sync to someone else's song. Then one reaches some sort of enlightenment. And I wrote, love yourself as the show ends.
Yeah.
So, I would kind of pull that point back a little bit, taking into account what you said. This is really ultimately about creativity. Though I do see some symbolic value in the lip syncing rather than singing one's own
song.
Well,
that's something that they've never actually talked about, and I'd really like them to talk about that.
Yeah.
The thing is, you don't have to be a musician to be a drag queen.
No.
So should you have to write your own songs?
Yeah. I mean, because their creative output is the makeup, is the clothes,
is the performance,
right? And performing the song probably better than the original person was able to perform.
How is this any different than a musical? You didn't write that. Irving Berlin wrote that song. So does that take anything away from Bing Crosby? Absolutely not.
I agree with you and not my email. I wrote Drag Race is a kind of fun in quotes, where everyone is crying at the end. and this one I may not pull back on so quickly, but I wrote it's a competition like consumerism in general. Drag Race is equal parts a support system and a barrage of judgmental critique. Drag Race is work described as, Drag Race is work disguised as play. It's a little bit cold out. It's hard to talk. But I mean, I need to say that one more time. Drag Race is a kind of fun where everyone is crying at the end. There was this fixation on kind of like the confidence thing.
Yeah.
Of forcing everybody to smile. And when you force everybody to smile, everybody puts on that fake smile, it breaks down into tears. And that's where the show is all about the support system, right? Especially backstage. And then the show ends with a barrage of judgments from a panel of literal judges, and people are crying. It's a competition.
The panel for this episode, like every episode, is RuPaul, Santino, Michelle Visage. The guests were Rachel Dratch and the model Janice Dickinson. Those were the two guest judges, and those are the other three that you always have up there.
Right.
Now, the judgment, I think, is very important. Without that, what's the show? You kind of need to have that. Or else then no one wins, no one loses. It just never ends.
Well, then the critique would be on the existence of the show, not the...
Yeah.
Right, or as a competition.
Now, and one of the things that all of these people say, they never tell you to stop. They never tell you to quit. They go, I've seen you do this better.
Right.
How about this? Yeah. There's actual notes for these critiques. Yeah. They're not abstract notes at all. For example, Latrice Rell, they said, Latrice, take off that necklace. Oh my God, your outfit's better. The theme is there.
Right.
You're not seeing the theme. You're too close to it. That's constructive criticism.
Yeah. Sounds a lot like one's boss.
Yeah, these are the people that have worked in this industry. No, that's what they are.
But couching support in that, in this, I'm your boss, you need to conform or else you'll be punished, in a show about embracing nonconformity
is mixed
message.
And that's a great point to bring up. That's a great point to bring up. And here's why.
Should you really make a competition out of nonconformity? Because it's only going to look like conformity at the end.
That's true.
It's an internal contradiction. It's a paradox, and it left me a little uncomfortable.
This is why you'll love Sharon Needles. Sharon Needles won the entire competition.
I've seen only one episode.
I don't understand
this.
I want to just stress this. Like, this was probably the absolute worst episode for you to watch, and I'm glad that this is the one that you
picked
saw.
It wisely.
This is perfect for you.
Okay.
I agree with almost everything you've said this far. Continue.
Okay, let me finish. I'm right at the end of my email. I wrote, "You go, girls." Thus, the refrain of conforming, being well behaved than your competition, who lost for the sole reason as they did not live up to the standards enforced by the judges. We already talked about not metaphorical but literal judges gazing on with critique and punishment. To win is to adhere to the rules and expectations. To humiliate yourself when asked, as the competition
showed. This one was that. And
to labor.
Shame.
To labor when you'd rather play, to be docile and controllable on demand. Individuality is celebrated in theory, but in practice what is rewarded is being individually the most conformist to the prescribed set of rules that anthropomorphize into the almost frighteningly judgmental RuPaul character. So it's kind of like video games. They seem like fun, but to beat a video game means that you conform to the rules of the game.
Okay, yeah.
Right? It's kind of like being at work and to be the perfect employee. And so this is the contradiction of making a competition around who can be the most individual and unique and authentic.
Yes.
Because what you have to do is really conform to the rules that RuPaul sets up.
Yeah.
And you have to be, ultimately, to win at being an individual is to be a conformist. That's the message you get at the end of the show.
I'd say you're right. But no, you're right, and that's what the show is. But but this is not the last stop in a career for these people.
In a way,
this is sort of like any athlete. This is college baseball. This is college football. This is college basketball. If you succeed well in this show, you will get drafted to a very good team. Now, once you're on that team, you could become the all-star. For example, Sharon Needles won last year. Right. Now Sharon Needles is doing exactly what she wants on Logo, conforming to no one but her current boss, which is life. She is now hosting a show. She's doing Elvira.
That's
she's
cool.
hosting a horror movie night on Logo now. And that's exactly what she wanted to do. So she did all these challenges that she did not agree with, but you have to conform enough while not losing sense of self. And that sense of self is something that you can create and make up and play with, and that's why I find it fascinating.
Yeah, I give you that.
You're playing in the constructs of the real world, but you're making it appear to be fun for the outsider.
Right.
Now, one of the things that you didn't see is because they do these backstage shows. So, yes, you see, sorry, the Interior Illusions Lounge. It's post-performance, pre-lip-sync for your life.
Okay.
That's where it gets fascinating. So you see the backstage. You see us, we're bonding, we're connecting. Here's my dad did this, my brother did this, my wife, I'm now divorced and gay. That's what you'll hear there.
That's important television.
Very important. Really, you'll see him perform. Cool. And then after, they will dissect the performance. They will go through and talk about what happened in the workroom. How did that play out onto the stage?
Right.
And then reassess. Did you do what Michelle said last week? Did you actually listen to what these judges said? Why are they saying this? And some reject the judges' critiques, and they're eliminated. And some reject the judges' critiques and become something better.
That's
and
really
that's
cool.
That's fascinating.
And, you know, I think that's life, is dealing with people expecting you to
yes.
behave in certain ways, and then sometimes you have to suck it up and do that and still be an individual, or, you know, I mean, whatever. Like, it's all really, really complicated, and the show, it's sort of a contradiction. And you know what's kind of cool about that is that that's what life is.
Yeah.
Life really is that contradiction. Nobody gets to be this authentic, you know, truly unique person all the time, and you know, you have to balance the pressures of what people are asking of you and still being yourself. Like, all of that, and it's messy and it's complicated. The show doesn't resolve it. How could they?
Exactly.
You know, our lives don't resolve that. And ultimately, seeing that process play out, especially backstage, I think is really, really cool TV.
And that's why it's my favorite reality show. Do you see my point now? Do you see why I love this show?
Yep. I have a couple small critiques, but overall, well, I mean, with the ones I
yes,
with
yes,
the
yes,
consumerism
yes.
or whatever. But I mean, overall, yeah, I definitely agree. I think is one of the cooler TV shows I've
now,
seen.
Now, here's the $100 million question. Will you watch it again? Will you watch it if we don't record an episode? Will you just watch it to watch it?
If there's more backstage talk, as you mentioned,
yes.
that I'm into, the sort of contrived, formulaic reality TV competition, silly editing, silly music,
yeah.
false drama, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah, all the competition aspect is just too boring for me. There's no way I'd be able to sit through 45 minutes of that. But if it was really just, you know, if they took out the competition and just let people talk and be, you know,
yeah.
I would watch that for 45
you would,
minutes.
You want to watch a documentary about one or a group of drag queens instead of seeing them having to compete. That's what's more interesting
yeah.
to you, the documentary
yeah.
aspect
yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
That's fair. I really would like for you to watch the next season, which premieres in January, when they're not all-stars.
We'll do this again next year.
Yeah, yeah. I want you to see it when these people that didn't have a lot of confidence. These are all people that have gone through the ringer. They know the system. But these people that are learning who they are over time and seeing that growth. And that growth could be something small and stupid, like, don't dance this way. Or don't wear these contacts. And it could be massive, like, come out to your dad. Fuck your dad. If he doesn't accept you, it's okay. That stuff is brilliant to me.
Yeah,
that's
great.
It's great. Thank you so much for doing this.
Cool. Thanks. It was fun.
So there's some sort of context. We are currently outside of a party in Park. Is it Parkview? Are we in Parkview?
I think
right
we're technically. Yeah, we're south of Rock Creek. So yeah,
we're in Parkview, yeah. The neighborhood of Washington D.C. It's probably about 50 degrees, 40 degrees. We're pretty cold. We're on a street corner.
You can see our breaths.
Talking about Drag Race. So thank you so much. And once again, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? And to be a fantastic person, not only drag queen, but person, you need five things. You need cunning, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. And for some bullshit reason this year, synergy. So thanks for listening, everybody.
Money.
And have a wonderful night.